Good evening, and welcome to Screen Tone Club, episode 33. Nice number there, 33. We're recording this on the 15th of September, 2019, for release on the 17th of September, 2019. This is your fortnightly look at manga, with a focus on joint discussion. If you like what we're doing here, and I'm getting kind of ahead of myself here at the start, but you can support us on Patreon. We have a special Patreon where even if you toss us like $1 a month, $1 US dollar, you get bonus episodes every month. And if you chip in a little more, you get to vote on what we cover. Our next bonus episode at the end of the month will be picked as of next week. So you have a week left to make your choices. We have a pretty good dead heat going on at the moment, right this second. So we have like a three-way tie between three quite nice series. So looking forward to seeing what we get out of that. But democracy being what it is, anyone can come in and upset the apple cart, which is the joy of something. Anyway, other Patreon business. Shout-outs to Rob Jessup once more, who has very kindly pledged at a high tier, our highest tier of 12 smackaroos, but much appreciated because it really helps keep the light on and helps ameliorate the expense of buying a hell of a lot of manga. Right, my name's Elliot Page, and I have completely and utterly neglected to introduce my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley. How you doing, Andy? Sorry about that.
That's quite right. I'm still sat here quietly recovering from the very British trauma I had yesterday of my kettle dying.
Yeah, that seemed rough, like, especially because you live in our soft water area, so how the hell did that even happen?
I mean, it was literally like it was a very old kettle, and the hinge of the lid literally snapped off, like the plastic had worn and perished to the point where it's just like, nope, I can't do this anymore. I'm it's time for me to shuffle from this mortal coil. So I ended up with a kettle without a lid, which is kind of suboptimal. Admittedly, I did end up boiling a kettle using just an oven glove holding the lid on, because
Andy.
You know, again, there are a few things that can get between a British person and their cup of tea, and it's like, no, I'm not having this. So I soldiered through, but now I have a new kettle, so
enjoy your first degree hand burns, dude. Jesus.
Yeah, so the trauma is receding because I have a working kettle again. So
man, that's not even an excuse. Like, I live, I'm about to move, but I live in the blighted south where all the water around here has to go through at least 60 kilometers of like sheer chalk and limestone before it gets to you. So I'm currently eating approximately 3 kilograms of calcium a day just through tea.
Yeah, it is the crazy thing. Like, once I moved up here, it's like, oh wow, like now I don't know what to do with all this kettle descaler I have, because it is literally useless to me now.
My shower head is not screaming in pain whenever I try and use it. Weird.
Exactly. So that concludes your British water minute.
Yeah, well, we had to talk about tea, and you know, on we go from there. So anyway, talking about other things in a minute, nice try to segue, although it's wrong. It's our returning champions feature, which I don't actually have anything to return to at the moment because I've been packing my life into boxes. Have you caught up on anything in particular, Andy?
No, I kind of have a growing list of things that, where you know, subsequent volumes have come out, and I'm kind of itching to read them, but yeah, it's kind of also entering a kind of peak season for busyness for me as well. So I have a list of things that are kind of like itching at the back of my brain of just like, I really want to read more of these, but I'll get to them eventually.
Yeah, I must admit, in some series I've been reading, I've now slightly cooled on, like Happiness by the author who also did Flowers of Evil, which I have 2 unread volumes of that I have purchased and downloaded, but just don't really have the wind up me to read. I could probably guess at why, but I'm not sure. But more importantly, I'm also keeping my eyes fixed into the middle distance, because by the end of the month, another volume of Land of Illustrious is coming out, and just grab hands, gimme is all I can really say about that in particular. Also as a final note, Chainsaw Man's still good. Please read Chainsaw Man. That series still continues to amaze and scare the hell out of me, because I constantly read it going, I love this series, I hope it doesn't get shut down. Like, I just feel like Jump has an axe over it for some reason. Maybe it's just paranoia because things I love in Jump get killed.
Yeah. Well, it feels like a paranoia that the series itself shares, because it always feels like it's trying so hard to kind of justify its existence and kind of shout from the rooftops that it is a thing that needs to continue to run. And I think it's kind of like, there's almost an osmosis to that series of you can kind of feel the anxiety seeping out of the pages into your own kind of flesh as you read it page by page. And like, you start a chapter and by the end of it, you're also thinking like, oh God, I hope this doesn't get cancelled. I hope this isn't the last issue.
Yeah, that's also a feeling that came across to me during one of our picks for this week, but not the one I covered. So do you mind if I take first stint, Andy, instead of just foisting it on you once again?
Go ahead.
So I decided and demanded we read We Never Learn. I can't remember the Japanese title for it, but whatever. It's We Never Learn. It's published by Viz in Shonen Jump. The series is currently ongoing. It's at around 130-ish chapters at the time of talking. And because it's on the Shonen Jump application and we both have subscriptions, I kind of said, well, read until you get sick. And so I basically read the first 20 or 25 or so chapters at the start, kind of refresh and recalibrate, because I read it week by week, you know, the latest chapters, which is very easy to kind of just binge 20 pages and come away from it and go, yep. It's by Taishi Susuri. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm very sorry if I'm not. As mentioned, it's on the Viz Shonen Jump subscription, and it also has physical volumes. 5 volumes are currently out in English, but if you really want to get on it, I'd recommend the Shonen Jump app, because it works well, frankly. The people who've been quietly patching that have done a good job, quite frankly. But enough about that. So first and foremost, We Never Learn is about Nariyuki Yuiga, who is a guy with silly hair that's not quite an ahoge because it's too shy to really stand free and proud. But he's a rather boring dude. He's like a standard guy. He lives in a nice extended family and he's a bit poor, bless him. Poverty moe going on, which is a bit galling, but there it is. But basically, he is trying his damnest to study his dick off and get the scholarship offered by his high school, which will allow him to go to university, well, college, completely tuition free, which for him is a real big deal because he can't really think of a way he'd otherwise get into college. And so he is called over by the principal, who goes, yeah, I see you study a lot, but I've got a small condition for you getting the scholarship. We have these two geniuses in this school. We have Ritsu Ogawa, who is a little pint-sized late girl with big old boobies, who is a genius at math and is just kind of a savant. And we have Furuhashi, whose first name I forget, but Furuhashi, who is the taller, rather sort of flatter girl with long black hair, very Yamato Nadeshiko sort of thing, who's really good at soft skills and English and Japanese and sort of literature. That's the phrase I'm looking for. But the problem is they wanted to go into the opposite fields. Ritsu wants to go into psychology and Furuhashi wants to go into astronomy, and they're hot garbage at these subjects. And so Yuiga is told, hey, you've previously shown some aptitude for studying and training people to study, so we'd like you to give them a go. And it turns out that this is not the first tutor these girls have had. They don't have any trust in Yuiga to start with. In fact, they don't learn his lesson for like four. They don't learn his name for 4 chapters. And he eventually starts to win them over. And We Never Learn is kind of the what it then grows into after a few stumbling sort of starting steps as it finds its feet and its level of tone. Is it's a combination like Search for Your Dreams manga, study manga, and also flat out romantic pratfall comedy. Where quite quickly, I think it mostly establishes itself around chapter 16, is the Yuiga Bowl, insert air horns here, where basically Yuiga suddenly has this harem of nice characters around him who are both studying with him and learning about themselves and growing and kind of all that stuff. And Yuiga himself is learning more about himself and what he can bring to the world and what he feels comfortable doing, especially where I am now. But also all of them are kind of in different degrees of denial about how much they like him and whether they want to go out. So it's now turned into this kind of compacted romantic comedy. And I kind of like it, frankly, like out and out, mostly because it never over-eggs the pudding when it comes to the romantic comedy elements. It's highly episodic. So each chapter is a self-contained 20-page chunk. There are very few ongoing storylines. And when there are, they're generally quite segmented into like a few chapters. In particular, it doesn't do something that always irks me about romantic comedies, is it doesn't snap every character around into it. Oftentimes it's Yuiga and one other character, or sometimes just two of the girls hanging out, or, you know, a few characters of the subset, but it doesn't constantly do the thing where the thing I always thought that Nisekoi kind of did from the little I read of it, where it couldn't help just shoving in every character one after another into the grinding mill of the current thing du jour for the storyline. Like, it will trade off which character is currently active between chapters, but it doesn't have this thing where something happens and then everyone has to get their oar in. It's kind of refreshing in that way because it allows a much better lens on the characters in particular. So you get, within the first four chapters, you get a third character added, who is Yuiga's sort of childhood friend, Uruka, who is like a swim team superstar and wants to go to an athletic scholarship, but she needs to pass an English test for plot reasons, and she's hot garbage at studying as well. And she's great. I love her dearly. But also she's kind of a nice, helpful character that's from a different sort of arena, but also helps to give a bit more sort of depth. And then you also have Asumi, who comes around volume like chapter 30, who is the ronin who actually failed to get into her school and is now studying her guts off, and who she brings a nice little sort of quite sneaky edge to it. But then also weirdly you have the school teacher, Kirisu, who is a former child star of figure skating and is now a teacher, and is this weird, like, if it wasn't for the fact that the series has this weird like horny eye on her that constantly shows her visible panty line, it'd be a lot better, because it's a fact where she's someone who is, she feels like she wasted her life, yada yada, she worries that she squandered her talents, and she's very, very scared of her charges doing the same thing. But then she falls over on her face and you get a nice look at her ass, and it's a case of like, okay, you could take the whole, you know, Yuiga Bowl part away from her and that'd be totally fine. And that's kind of the one thing I dislike the most about the series, is just Kirisu being rather strange, and that being on its face kind of like daft and clearly, you know, untoward and not done, as it were. So untenable, that's the word. It's clearly an untenable situation and they both know it, but it's, the series keeps dangling them together in this weird way, and it's like, does anyone want this? Does anyone want this like romantic storyline? But oh well. But yeah, that's what I kind of like about it, especially as it ramps up. Like, I'm now like, you know, as I say, I'm on the latest chapter, and the series has actually staked out an ending because they only have so long until exams, and it actually moves time forward. And at this point, things are ramping up into what is very clearly an end game. So I actually really appreciate that, where previous series like this, much like Yamadori Kun and the Seven Witches, never effing ended, never figured out how to end, and ended up making itself really trash in the end because it couldn't handle it, a way of actually just finishing off. Like, it couldn't figure out how to stop, and it was a nightmare. But I've gabbed a lot about this series and why I like it. But the main reason I picked it was because I wanted Andy to read it and find out how far he got, and if he possibly came to like it by the end, question mark. Andy, what did you think?
So I made it through the first seven chapters, which is basically the first volume of it. I've also watched the first season of the anime adaptation as well, so I'm kind of beyond where I read to in the story. But I don't know, like, I mean, it's the thing I was actually trying to kind of find a definitive answer to, because I keep seeing people saying this, but I keep seeing people like mention like, oh, the author of We Never Learn was an assistant on Nisekoi. And I know he like illustrated, he drew like one of the spin-off mangas of Nisekoi, but I couldn't actually find like a definitive, yes, this guy worked on Nisekoi, because this very much to me feels like a guy who kind of sat, watched Nisekoi getting drawn, kind of like did his work on it, and then sort of basically compiled kind of a checklist of generic romantic comedy things to do and then just plowed them all into We Never Learn. Because, like, I mean, I dropped off of Nisekoi, I can't really recall at what point, but like, there's a point that I dropped off of Nisekoi quite badly.
Well, because
like,
for a while you were quite a booster of it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I really, really enjoyed kind of like the first few volumes. Like, probably it must have been like the first half dozen volumes or so. And like it, like you said, it kind of got to that point where it was throwing in so many characters and they all had to have a stake in everything that was going on, and that kind of like sunk it for me. But at least Nisekoi like had characters that I was invested in and kind of a premise that was at least kind of fun and interesting in some sense. And like, this was my problem with We Never Learn, is like, I don't care about any of the characters and the premise is just kind of the most generic, like, oh, we need to study kind of thing. And like, it, I feel like it doesn't really do enough with the potentially interesting part of its premise of like, okay, well, these characters want to do something that is outside of kind of their natural skill set. And it kind of drops in some throwaway kind of ideas of like, oh, this is why they want to go down this path. But like, none of it really felt particularly compelling to me. And then kind of when that just gets dropped into kind of, you know, cliched romantic comedy setup of the week, it was just like, it felt like something I'd read 1,000 times before, but with 1,000% less charm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, one thing about, you mentioned about the, like, the reasons for them studying outside of their natural niches is, it's one of these things, it kind of keeps its powder dry for later, for actual, like, character building arcs, I think around the 60s, 70s, 80s in chapters, which, if, you know, saying you got to stay on the hook for that long for the explanation of why they want to do things weird is a lot. Like, it's kind of that, that's not really a possible thing. I mean, I think, from my point of view, I think I glommed onto what was there of the characters much more readily. Mostly because there was only two of them to start with, and that was easy to start with. And I kind of liked the sort of characters. And the first, I will say that the first, I was kind of keeping in my notes clear that I didn't like this series that much when I first started. And I was a case of, okay, see how long it takes for quote unquote it to get good. And I think it was actually around like 16 chapters or so, and I was like, oh no, I think this is now into the good bit. So somewhere between the last 5 chapters or so, it got quote unquote good for me, which is still a lot of manga to read given that it's like 2 volumes worth. But yeah, I think for me it was a case of, I've kind of been wanting a harmless romantic comedy for a while, and this popping along and kind of being a bit goony kind of grabbed me. But if you want anything deeper than that, it's not there. Like, it's just, it's, yeah. I'm not going to say it's great, it's like fine literature, it's a goony romantic comedy. And, you know, especially if you don't like boob envy jokes, like, those are intensely boring to me, and they happen a lot. So it's very much a case of, yes, I know there's a boob size disparity between the characters, can we move on? Like, yeah, can you just, yeah, do, I mean, more funny faces, please?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, kind of like, looking at it from an outside point of view, like, I feel like this series has come along at the right time for itself, because it kind of, it's come along in a time when a lot of the other sort of similar series are kind of intensely kind of quite mean and selfish. I mean, we talked in the past on the show about Quintessential Quintuplets, which is kind of like the exact opposite of this series. And, like, you know, I would choose We Never Learn over that for sure, because, like, there is kind of a, like you say, it's kind of like nice and low stakes. Like, you know, nobody's drugging the main character. Like, nobody is really being bitching towards one another. And that's both its kind of its strength and its weakness for me. Like, I think one of the things I liked about Nisekoi is that it kind of managed to walk the line of, like, oh, these characters sort of become friends, but there's also this intense rivalry going on in terms of, you know, who gets to end up with the main character. Whereas this, I mean, I know from what I've seen of the anime that it kind of, it shifts a bit more in the direction of kind of like, you know, the various characters in Nariyuki's kind of, in his orbit, kind of becoming aware of their feelings and the feelings of other characters around them. And it kind of plays with that a bit, but, like, it always feels like it's very, it's almost too nice and polite about it, where sometimes you just want just a little bit of needle just to kind of, like, add a bit more frisson to it. Whereas here it feels like it's very much, you know, sort of the margarine of that, where, you know, everybody is nice to one another at all times.
Yeah, I think the whole studying aspect makes it kind of muddied, because the show, like, the series in general is much more about, like, sort of chasing your dreams and out-and-out romance, but then it has plenty of romantic comedy antics stapled in. So as you learn more about the characters, like, initiatives for doing what they're doing, it makes a lot more sense, but also it means that all of them are having to pointedly put romance on the back burner, even when they're being idiot, horny teens. And also, it, you know, each character has their own individual take on how they're approaching the whole Yuiga Bowl sort of situation, which means they never really come into conflict, so you don't get that sort of needle, as you mentioned. The closest you ever seem to get is with Rizu and Uraka kind of clashing a little bit, but politely. It's more like sort of checking each other in the shoulders than knives out, as it were. I mean, Furuhashi, God knows if she actually isn't, it does like Yuiga at any point, and who knows what the fuck is going on with Asumi. Like, she's just a little imp who, like, kind of exists to taunt Nariyuki, and who knows how deep her feelings go because she's so guarded. I mean, as I say, like, where the series currently is, chapter 130-ish, it's set up with an end date. Like, the exams are in sight and characters are starting to actually, like, quote-unquote, get serious about how they feel. And so, you know, and those rather than being an ongoing state are distinct arcs, which happen every now and then. And it's a case of, oh, okay, this is actually now the actual bowl arc where this is going to get resolved. So, the majority of the series is very risk-free, goony, idiot thing of the week, like the time that someone made Yuiga a boxed lunch and they left it on a truck, which then drove to a different prefecture, but they end up trying to chase it anyway. So that sort of goony garbage.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I will say, like, very much in the show's favour is, like, the character designs are very good. Like, they're very on point. Like, I mean, it was, again, like, one of the notable things for me, given that this is basically the third time I've kind of revisited sort of the start to this series, is I'd completely forgotten all the character names, which kind of, like, tells you how, like, uninvested I was in them all.
Ooh.
But by the same token, it's like I knew all of the characters, like, by their kind of visuals. And, like, all of those character designs are very good at putting across, like, what and who that character is in very kind of quick shorthand. Like, that is kind of the one thing that I, again, probably leads into the whole, like, did this guy work on Nisekoi thing, because that had a very similar kind of feel. Like, the character designs were very emblematic of the characters themselves, and, like, I think that's something that this series also does very well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, another series I really enjoyed and had, like, extended harem antics was The World God Only Knows, and all the characters there, even the ones that were really mundane, all had a different sort of spark to them. I think especially, like, at the very start of this series, especially for the first volume's worth, the series is still finding its shorthand. I mean, Yuiga in particular looks like an arsehole. Like, he looks like a villain from another series, or like a bad rival. And eventually, as the series goes on, he kind of softens and doesn't get quite as pointy. And all the different characters start to get different shorthands for when they're pulling a strop, or sulking, or pouting. Mostly sulky sort of looks, but they start to get different, like, comedic, goony shorthand, like slapstick images. In particular, it's usually when Rizu sort of puffs her cheeks out and has a pout, which works pretty well, because she looks like a big, like, hamster idiot. So more of that sort of stuff starts to come into play as the series kind of finds its characters and plays with them and kind of has that space. But yeah, it's, again, at the same time, like, I want to praise the series more, but most of the things that I really love about it are in the ongoing later on, which is kind of rude to say, oh, by the time you get to chapter 30, I fell in love with it, which is a lot of reading, even if you is for quote-unquote free or a cheap subscription. What was it? So just by seven, you just kind of... So by chapter 7, you more kind of just fell off the wagon more than to quit in disgust sort of thing, Andy.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, like I say, you know, the anime that I've kind of seen goes beyond that. Like, it introduces those other two characters that you mentioned whose names I've forgotten again.
God damn it.
And, like, you know, I'd seen that. And again, like, those were very much a case of, like, oh, these characters could be cool. And then it's like, oh, they've kind of done their one thing now, and they're just going to do that again for the, you know, until the end of time. So I think I'm kind of done with it. Like, it's a shame, because, like, there are some fun moments in this series and so on and so forth, but, like, they just felt so few and far between. Like, I mean, it's kind of because I wasn't really invested in the romance angle, like, I guess I was kind of started digging into the comedy side of, like, okay, are you going to, like, get a lot of laughs out of me? And it kind of doesn't really have a lot going for it there either, because, again, it's very much kind of, you know, paint by numbers, like, oh, these are the jokes you've seen before in, you know, 1,000 other romantic comedies. And like you say, it's a lot of kind of pratfalls and et cetera, et cetera. And, like, it never manages to find anything to kind of break out and do anything outside of the norm, which I guess is kind of what I was hoping for in some shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, I admit, like, when you got Kirisu in the mix, her, like, having chapter number 6 or whatever, where it's just, oh, isn't she a slob at home? It's like, yes, we did this joke. Please leave her alone. She's clearly having a hard time being an adult. like, that's fine. I live in a mess. Shut up. Stop judging me, comic. But I think that part of it, especially when you think about the length of an anime episode, I think those sort of one-shot pratfall sort of things work a lot better being week on week and also being 20 pages long rather than X minutes of animation continuously. Because at least with the manga, you can kind of burn through it. And in your 20 pages, you can have told your entire story rather than having to animate, you know, do an actual animation sort of thing, which I think maybe takes away from it. I've only watched one or two episodes of the anime and kind of just went, ah, I'm good. So I stuck to the manga. So yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting you to be won over, and I wasn't attempting to be like, Andy, you must read all of this. It was just a, let's just see if I can change his mind on this a little, or at least see what he thinks about it and get it on tape. So yeah, mission complete, I suppose.
Yes, yeah, I shall look forward to the hate mail forthcoming, because I know it's a very popular series, and I'm sure I'm very much in the minority on this one.
You can't like everything, but so with the prerequisite that if you can remember the character's name still, who would you like to win the bowl?
The headmaster, I don't know.
That'd be fun.
Anyone else? No, I don't know. Like, again, that's kind of the thing for me, is that there was no character that I was like, oh, I like this character. They're all just like, yep, that is a character in a manga. And, like, there was no individual who I could even kind of pinpoint one part of them that was just like, oh, yeah, like, here's somebody I can get behind. They were all just kind of there.
Man, I mean, God, that's, oh, dear me, dude. I mean, I don't know. I really like the character set in this series, and my own particular personal rankings of who should win the bowl slash, I mean, to be fair, like, having talked with this with friend of the show Demelza Ward before on Discord, like, my main requirement for this series is that all the characters kind of come out of it having learned something and grown as people, which is the easy, like, schleppy sort of response, but, you know, all of them are young and they're trying to get something and they're working earnestly for it, so I hope that all works out for them. But when it comes to the bowl, the most important question, I don't know, you know Ogata's pretty good. I think she should win if she wants to. I don't know, don't have to force it on him or anything. But yeah, okay, but yeah, that's when we never learn, as mentioned, available from Shonen Jump. Okay, so moving on to our second topic of the evening, and also Andy's pick, a bit of a heavyweight, once again bringing a wrecking ball to, I don't know, this demolition derby. So Andy, please introduce your pick for the week.
Yeah, so yes, a heavyweight in the literal sense as well, because this is a two-volume omnibus, which took some reading, it has to be said. So yeah, like on one of our bonus episodes recently, we talked about Ranma Half. If you're a Patreon subscriber or you want to subscribe, you should go back and listen to that one, because I think it was a good episode. Mm. That kind of very much got me in a bit of a Harumiko Takahashi mood. Like, I really enjoyed reading Ranma. Like, I'll probably go and maybe read some more of it at some point, because I had a good time with it. And it kind of, like, set the wheels in motion in the back of my head that I've never read any of Urusei Yatsura, which is kind of perhaps the classic Takahashi manga, like, even over and above Ranma Half. And so I figured that we should put that right for this show, and we read the first volume, which, as mentioned, is a two-volume omnibus from Viz. And I guess one thing that I was never actually entirely sure about is what the kind of literal translation of the title is, and apparently it's Obnoxious People, which actually fits pretty well for this series when you start reading through it.
Yeah, that's basically correct and on the money when you think about it. I mean, yeah. Another translation that I have previously seen bandied around was Those Damn Aliens, but Obnoxious People also works really well, especially when you read the, like, author's notes in these volumes, which have Rumiko Takahashi kind of, you know, waxing poetic about the series and its place in her career, which is almost worth the price of admission just for having this sort of unalloyed sort of voice of Takahashi right there and then.
For sure. So the series starts with the main character getting a slap from his girlfriend, and
not the last.
Not the last. And as it turns out, guy deserves every slap he gets, because the main character, Atelier Moriboshi, he's a womanizer. Like, I think that's fair to say, to put it mildly. Yeah, like, and he's a bit of a jerk all around. It's kind of made clear very early on via this priest that he's also an incredibly unlucky person. Like, you know, some of his bad luck is well deserved, as kind of effectively aforementioned. But he's also just like, you know, if he was to be drawn out of a lottery of everybody on Earth to fight some aliens, he'd be the guy that gets drawn out. And what do you know? That's exactly what happens. Because aliens land in the first chapter. Basically demands, hey, you need to put somebody forward to kind of fight against us, otherwise we're just going to take over your planet unless you can win. And Asteri's name is the one that's drawn out. And so he has to fight in a game of tag against Lum, who is the bikini-wearing kind of classic manga figure who is just kind of like, has become an iconic character. I imagine probably even people who don't even read manga will be like, oh yeah, I think I've seen that character design somewhere before.
Or at the minimum, it's been ripped off and like it's been different shades of it taken elsewhere, that it's now like, it's now crazy to see the original article, frankly.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, it's almost weird to see, like, in its own environ, particularly because it kind of, and again, sort of talking about Takahashi's sort of notes around this series, like, she wasn't really meant to be kind of any kind of star of the series to start with. Like, this series clearly started out as being a kind of somewhat episodic story of Atelu and kind of the people of the town that he lives in, and just kind of like the hijinks that happen around this town and around this one guy.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so like your starting point is kind of like, you know, Lum comes along as kind of, you know, the opponent in this game of tag for the future of Earth. Like, basically, Atelu has 10 days to tag her in, and manages to win the day in the end.
Which, he doesn't again, deserve to, though, let's be fair. Like,
no, exactly. Like, by kind of a combination of being a bit of a jerk and just kind of like generally a bit of luck alongside that. And that all kind of leads to an accidental marriage proposal, which is supposed to be to his girlfriend Shinobu, but ends up kind of being understood by Lum to be a proposal from him. And so kind of Lum sort of disappears for a little bit and then kind of reappears kind of a few chapters later, which again kind of I think speaks to kind of the way this series kind of grew and sort of formed itself as it went along. And it's really kind of, it is a pretty episodic series. It is usually some kind of like weird supernatural slash alien slash just general weirdness going on around Atelu being unlucky, etc. One thing that really surprised me about these volumes is just how wordy they are. Like,
oh, totally.
There is a lot of dialogue in this series.
I mean, a lot of it kind of flows well, which is to the benefit of the series, in that If you did word count on this manga, you'd be, holy shit. But it's only when you notice it, or push yourself to notice it, you realise there's a lot of dialogue going on. But when you're reading, like, just in the flow, it doesn't feel that way, which makes it really wild. But then also, like I say, like, you spend a lot of time reading it, because there's a lot to actually read, rather than just skim. So it's real, yeah. It's quite a lot. And most of it is on point. Like, when I was reading it, I was screen capping or taking pictures of my tablet quite a lot, because a lot of the lines are real snappy and fun. There's one in particular I posted on Twitter, which is basically Lum trying to shove Atelu into a length of pipe, saying, oh, I'll turn it into a dimensional gateway. You'll get to work in no time. And Atteru's saying, no way, I'll get lost in the fourth dimension and suffer forever. And it's like a really good gag in one panel that's really wordy, but still really works.
Like I feel like there are some times where it kind of it overdoes it a bit, and it, and again, this is kind of sometimes a weird thing in terms of just localization as well, because I suspect the bits that maybe don't flow so well in English probably flow just fine in Japanese,
or they're like proverbs or something, so it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, it suddenly becomes a bit clunky kind of in translation. But yeah, like, it's just, because like thinking back to Ranma Half, that always felt quite kind of, you know, quite disciplined and quite kind of sparse a lot of the time in terms of its dialogue. That's very much kind of an action speak louder than words kind of series a lot of the time. So it was quite a shift for me. I felt like going to that, it just wasn't what I was expecting, of like, oh man, like there is a lot of dialogue and a lot of verbiage going around here that I wasn't necessarily expecting. But as you say, like, it has quite a few good gags, and that was the main thing that I got out of it, is like there were some really good laugh out loud moments. There are some really good gags. I just kind of wish that all of the characters weren't quite as insufferable as they are.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
Going back to that title, like, this really is a series where everybody's kind of obnoxious. Because, like, as mentioned, Atteru's a womanizer and a bit of a jerk. Like, his parents are
shit
assholes. Like, they're basically the first to kind of throw their own son under the bus at any given moment and just be like, yeah, you're a disappointment anyway, so like, yeah, whatever happens to you happens. Like, Lum is incredibly kind of self-centered and just kind of wants to do whatever she wants to do.
Yeah.
I mean, Shinobu is kind of like, understandably kind of at the end of her tether a lot of the time, but like, she can be a bit of a jerk at times as well.
Well, I feel like all the cast, especially all the human cast, are all complete jerks.
Yeah.
Whereas at least Lum and some of the other alien characters who you get introduced to, they're at least selfish but not pricks about it. Like, they're selfish and self-centered, but they're not throwing people under the bus actively, or their own son. So it kind of works out to the better for Lum, where she seems almost, like, purer as a result, even though... Oh, sorry. Even though she is a complete jerk, and she is a bit very selfish, is that at least she's doing it for herself rather than just being a shit. So that's kind of where I came down on it, of, like, trying to figure out why Lum is liked. It's like, well, you know, at least she's got a point behind it, and she's not just, like, spurning her child, so...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is just that kind of sort of... Genki girl element to her as well, but you know, she's just like energetic, she's just having fun, like, never mind that she's electrocuting people to do it. It's
yeah,
fine.
But they also deserve it, so who cares?
But yeah, that is the kind of the weird thing, like, it's sort of it's almost like the moral dilemma I was having in my head is, like, I hate all of these characters, but like, when one character I hate is getting electrocuted by another character that I don't really like, maybe that makes it okay. Is this like a two negatives is a positive thing? I don't know. But yeah, like, I mean, weirdly, sort of the one character that isn't massively selfish is actually kind of Cherry, the priest, who basically just gets dumped on by everybody else.
Yeah, but
even
he's
though,
also
like,
a shit. Like, he's still not that helpful or useful or good, and that's why he gets dumped to live on the riverside halfway through.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of is, but at the same time, like, he is also the one character who actually kind of tries to, like, clue people in on, like, oh, there's some bad stuff happening, and everyone's just like, and then when the bad stuff happens, it's like, well, this is all your fault because you mentioned bad stuff was going to happen. It's like, man, don't shoot the messenger. He was, you know, he was just trying to be helpful.
Because I think before the end of this volume, he goes on, like, a journey of discovery or something, so he gets shuffled out of the manga, which is probably a sensible move because he was too useful as a plot device character. So...
Yeah,
he kind of gets
yeah.
quietly sort of pushed away of like, ah, this character's useful, but also is too useful, so I need to get rid of him.
Yeah, which does kind of make sense at that juncture, because there's only so much you can do with it. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, the thing that I really enjoyed the most about this, I think, was actually kind of like the final chapter of this omnibus. Like, it's a really visually fantastic chapter, because it gets very surreal and kind of goes very sort of... off-world into some very strange realms, and it kind of almost it doesn't completely change its art style, but like the art style shifts substantially, and kind of it's a really good example of kind of the versatility of like Takahashi as an artist, of just like, okay, you've got this pretty decent looking and sort of very much of its time manga, but you also have kind of the ability to shake things up and change things around, you know, when required. And like, I find that just to be a really eye-catching chapter that has some really cool... Actually, it has some of the better gags in it as well, and like, it also has some really cool moments. Like, there's a point where like Ataru kind of literally falls through a bunch of panels, and the blocking between the panels just basically smashes away as he falls through them. And it's just like little things like that that are just really cool. And in a weird way, that being at the end of that omnibus was like, man, if there was more of this kind of stuff, like, I'd definitely be up for reading more of it, because that really kind of, like, caught my eye.
Yeah, some of that stuff was kind of wild, and I was like, oh, I think Takahashi's been reading some, like, old Tezuka works that do this sort of weird thing, and just sort of play with their sheer medium and the fact that they exist on a page. Like, I always love it when authors do that sort of stuff, and both hew to and then break their own conventions. But I think the one thing that this series, one of the things that you kind of touch on is that because the series base is so... The series is very loosely defined in its basis. Like, you know, it's about a bunch of obnoxious people in a small area, but more importantly about Ataru being obnoxious and unlucky. Means that you can kind of spin that out into absolutely anything and still have it be the sort of arena of play of the series. You know... Because, like, you know, the first episode is, like, aliens want to play tag, and then later on they go to, like, the Snow Woman, planet or dimension or whatever the fuck, and they just go through the, like, storage closet to get there. And you can just... It can just do that shit. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't care. Like, it's so wide open with its interpretation of what its scope is that it can do anything it wants, including, like, weird meta sort of commentary and meta, like, sort of physical questioning. And that all still kind of works, because you've got the same characters and they're still doing the same sort of stuff and being shat upon, but it all works, which is kind of what gives the series its kind of insane scope and power, almost, of, well, I can do that, that's fine, like, anything's impossible for this series, like, who gives a fuck, we got aliens here. So yeah, it's kind of it's so relaxed in its own wheelhouse that it can kind of do anything it wants, and makes it kind of scary almost to when you look at it as a manga, is that you know, most other series like try and keep things in lore, whereas this is just like, I don't know, fuck it, I made a gag manga with an asshole and an alien hot alien girlfriend, go, and off it went, and it's great. And that's what kind of I'm sorry, I know you want to jump in, but like I think I mentioned before when I was talking about Dragon Ball to people, but like it feels extremely madcap, where it's like kind of groping for a raison d'etre to like not get public and continue getting published and not get cancelled. Like, it's so madcap, especially at the start. Like, Lum appears and then she vanishes and then she comes back and then she actually gets ensconced as a main character. The series is like actively trying stuff on and throwing it out and just testing everything, and it feels like it's actively running away from like a giant crocodile, which is called cancelled from Jump. Which makes it really manic and wild and frankly fascinating, because it's just constantly flipping out and doing stuff, which gives it its really crazy energy and power. It can also make it sometimes a bit weird when you're like, I don't feel this chapter. Like, sometimes you just don't care about the actual chapter, but the way it's come around to what it's doing is still fascinating from like almost a like a scholastic point of view, where like I'll be disenfranchised with a chapter and the storyline. I mean, the jokes will still work, but I'll be like, man, this is fascinating. Like, the author is clearly just going balls out on this, aren't they? And here's what we get, is something that's really crazy, and the craft on display is wild. So
yeah, and I think that's kind of the crazy thing for me, is just kind of like thinking along. It's I can't think of, certainly in modern times, any series that really does anything quite like it. Like, it feels, it's one of the things that sort of makes this feel very much of its time, but also it feels like it shouldn't. It's one of those things I find myself questioning, like, why don't you see series like this anymore? Like, maybe people will like correct me and be like, well, let me tell you about series X, but like, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that just sets up such a crazy scope and then just uses it to the kind of extent that even these kind of first two volumes do. Like, it's kind of, like you say, everything now is very much, you know, it sets up its lore and kind of creates the silo that it exists in, and then maybe occasionally it'll peek its head out around the corner of that, but like, for the most part, it just then exists within that space that it's created for itself. Whereas this basically says, my space is the entire universe and watch me use it. And, you know, I just can't think of anything else that does it with quite the gusto that let's say, yeah, sort of does.
It's great. Like, it really makes it refreshing, especially from a 2019 point of view. I mean, you've got like the chapters with Lum's brother, who is basically fucking useless, but is hilarious because he just wants to eat, and that's kind of fucking it. And he looks pretty, and it's this really wild character where it just constantly goofs. Like, friggin' Ataru's mum, of course, claps eyes on him and tries to seduce him in 4 seconds. And just random ass, you know, and like marital strife happening in the middle of the panel. Meanwhile, characters in the background punching each other and trying to eat a cream cake or something. It's wild. But to use a comparison point, I mean, you mentioned about the whole like setup of lore and the scope sort of thing. Like, the most recent thing I've been reading has been Demon Slayer, you know, Kimetsu no Yaiba, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
Which I can't. We might need to read it at some point, because I can't get my head around why I hate it. But basically, in part, I think it's because it sets up a lore at chapter one. Like, it sets up its lore and its scope and its space. And I think, okay, this is a good scope. You have plenty to explore in here. And then it discards it and adds a bolts another piece on when it hasn't explored barely any of the fertile ground of its scope. And it's driving me insane, because it keeps doing this. It's done this at least 4 times, and I'm only 20 chapters in. And it's really irritating, because it just keeps bolting on less interesting and more technical garbage onto its existing world state without exploring any of the possible possibilities of what it already had. Which is crazy. Meanwhile, you've got Urusei Yatsura, who's just like, I don't know, fuck it, the alien's dad comes to dinner. Like, it's great. And then it just fucking spins out from there. So it's kind of, the comparison is wild. But at the same time, like, Urusei Yatsura, you can see it kind of like almost just scraping along the ground to not get cancelled. I don't know, maybe I'm seeing too much in that. But it's the same kind of energy I saw in Dragon Ball, of like, oh fuck, you know, gotta keep writing for Jump. So
Yeah. I mean, I certainly get that feeling from kind of the way, you know, Lum kind of starts out as a sort of, yeah, I'm here for a chapter, and then like, I'm going to go off back to my home planet, and that's me done. And then like a couple of chapters later, it's like, I'm back again, because apparently I was popular, because who thought that the girl in the bikini would be popular?
Also, I've had my actress replaced.
Yeah, but like, yeah, I mean, that's the other weird thing about kind of all the crazy stuff that goes on is like, there's never really any kind of real disbelief from the people within that town. Like, you know, the aliens land in chapter one and they're very matter of fact, like, oh yeah, the aliens are landed. Like, you know, any other series would basically take a whole chapter of kind of, you know, the townsfolk running around in panic, like, oh my god, aliens, what are we going to do? Whereas it's like, yep, they're here, so I guess let's get on with this. And they want to play tag. I don't know. This makes sense, I guess. It is a weird and kind of crazy thing. Like, it's strange because I think at its core, I didn't really enjoy these volumes. But at the same time, like, there is stuff in it that I do find kind of fascinating, and it's kind of one of those, partly historically, partly just because of what it does and how it does it. Like, I'm very much glad I read it, and I don't think I'd read any more, but it's like, yeah, this is, I can see why this kind of ended up becoming something of a cultural phenomena on a multitude of levels.
Yeah, from my point of view, I mean, at the start, for the first volume or so, I was very sort of bland on it and was starting to view it more as like an academic sort of work to chew through. But then as I started getting into volume two and the scope of it started to get more, frankly, as it stretched its legs and got stupider and Ataru kind of got shat upon more, that I really came to like it. And by the end of the second volume of this two-volume set, I was kind of just nodding along going, yeah, like just kind of into it, as it were, just kind of, you know, take it, buying what it was selling, sort of thing, if that makes sense. Mostly just because, yeah, partially just because it's so manic, it's great, it's really fun just watching it just romp along.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely, again, like the late chapters of kind of the second volume overall, or like the end of this omnibus, kind of started to turn me around on it a bit, to the point where I was almost tempted of like, yeah, I could maybe go for some more. But at the same time, it is that kind of, it's kind of hard work, like sitting around with all these literal obnoxious people for so long. Like, in a way, maybe this would have been better like as a non-omnibus volume, where you kind of have a couple of hundred pages and then you can take a breather, or you know, I think maybe if you're reading it en masse is maybe not the best way to do it, because that's the other thing that this sort of reminds me of, because it's so compartmentalized with a lot of kind of what it does, give or take some kind of recurring characters. Like, it sort of reminded me a lot of more kind of like newspaper style comic strips, where, you know, there are parts of even chapters here where you could actually just pull out kind of four panels and just drop them in a newspaper somewhere, and you know, people would be like, oh yeah, that was a good comic, and that would be it. Like, there's a feeling of that kind of just like classic comic strip of, look, you've got three or four panels to set up a gag, you know, execute on it, and then you're gone again. And like, although there is kind of wider context around all of that stuff, there are these really good little moments that you can just pull out as their own thing and just be like, yeah, that was a really good little joke that you kind of set up and executed on just on you know, on the turn of a dime.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think the main reason why it might be an omnibus is in the same with Ranma Half, is that there's so many volumes to it. Like, there's 34 volumes to Ursei Yatsura and 38 to Ranma, that I get the feeling that putting it in omnibuses makes it an easier sell, both to bookstores, what few remain, but also people out there. Like, you can basically fling it at people going, hey, it's a historical artifact, also you should read it, also it's actually good, also hey, we got it in big blocks, so it's cheaper per volume to buy. So whereas if you tried to release it in 34 individual $10 volumes, I think that might be a big ask in 2019.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
especially when it's all already there, kind of thing. Like, it's not an ongoing series, so you can't just snare people and keep them dragging on behind you.
Yeah, for sure. I think in terms of release strategy, it does make sense. But I just feel like in terms of kind of reading depth, like, it's maybe the kind of series that is best sort of dipped into, you know, maybe a couple of chapters at a time rather than kind of like en masse, because it's kind of weirdly tiring, I feel like, on a few levels.
Oh no, yeah, I mean it's written for a weekly comic book comic anthology, and it works well as individual chapters because, as mentioned, they're all the characters are obnoxious, and so having small doses of them makes it fun. Well, mind you, not everyone has a podcast where they set each other things to read in a 2-week span, and so frankly it's our own damn fault, question mark.
Yeah, Who would do that?
Yeah, I mean, I have the blessing in that, like, I read this a month or so ago, and then when you nominated it, I just dipped in again just to kind of clarify my thoughts and make sure I had things the right of it, which was honestly quite nice because I got to dip into the chapters I wanted to read again, both for good and ill. So made it a lot more of an easier, like, a less burdensome proposition.
Yeah, that's maybe the way to go. But yeah, certainly an interesting series, and like again, it's one of those names that, you know, that's been bouncing around in my head in terms of, you know, manga you should probably read because it is kind of an important cultural touchstone. And so at least now I know what the deal is.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And also, of course, the anime came from this, but the anime had the benefit of it being a few volumes deep at least, so they could like just sort of trim up and tidy up the start of it so it doesn't feel quite as bizarre when it's like Lum here, Lum gone, Lum here, Lum gone, Lum here. So, and then she just hangs out. Like at some point you just come to accept that most of the forces in the universe just hang out in and around Ataru's bedroom, ready to like mock him at a moment's notice, and so set off a storyline. So
yeah, pretty much.
I mean, he deserves it, frankly, little idiot. But also, I mean, it's one of the things where like he is an asshole, but also everyone is so rude to him, like his parents, his friends, his supposed girlfriend, his alien girlfriend. Everyone's a jerk. It's wild.
Yeah. Like, I kind of look forward to the chapter where he just goes to therapy and just, like, gets all of this out of his system.
Yeah, but then the therapy then the therapist will whack him because she'll get sick of him. Like,
yeah, for sure. But yeah, it's, when you kind of try and think back into, like, maybe the deep history of this, it's like, what? It's very much a chicken and egg thing. Like, was Ataru a jerk first, or was it everybody that was a jerk to him that turned him into a jerk? Who knows?
I mean, he was born under an auspicious star, so what more do you need? Oh dear. But one also thing to mention about this series is, unlike Ranma Half, it is available digitally. So instead of buying a 400-page brick, you get a very large EPUB file. So yeah, have some time when you download it onto Comixology, because if the servers are slow, oh boy, you're going to be waiting a bit.
And the Comixology servers are always slow.
Oh, so. Always. It's wild. It's real wild. Like, on my e-ink tablet, it's a case of, okay, I've queued up two volumes, now to go away for an afternoon and hope it works. Yeah.
But don't let your tablet lock or the download will stop.
Yeah, it's great to do on a device that is very sensitive to screen burning. It's great. Love it. A+. Fuck.
Happy days.
Yeah, it's real lovely. Anyway, enough of that. But unless you got anything else to say about this, Andy?
No, I think that's me done.
Cool. We ended up having like a weird like past and present Shonen Jump episode. But what are we going to be talking about next time? So I have nominated something in a mild panic because I hadn't thought about this whatsoever. But I have nominated the light novel I Saved Too Many Girls and Caused the Apocalypse, Volume 1. One of the reasons why is because it's in my catalogue, my bookshelf, because it's currently free on Bookwalker, at least Volume 1 is. You've got to go claim it, but then it's yours forever. So if you want, you can go read that alongside us. So I figured, well, let's just dive into the light novel hellscape once more, shall we? I have heard this is actually quite funny, so I trust the people who have told me this, so I hope they haven't lied. But yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see. And Andy, how about you?
It's definitely on the kind of list of light novels where I've read the title and chuckled at just the name of it. So like that always bodes well as a starting point at least. I'm like, okay, you've kind of got me there.
I mean, also it works. I mean, also like another light novel someone's recommended to me has been Sexiled, where the character's been booted out of the party for being the single girl in the sausage group. So Sexiled is just a really good portmanteau. I like it.
It is. It really is. So my choice, talking about good titles, like, you know, I saw that there is a manga called Super Dimensional Love Gun, and I kind of thought, well, you know, it would be rude not to. But it's actually an anthology of stories created by Shintaro Kago, who may not be a name you're familiar with, but if you look up his work on Google, you will quickly be like, oh, that's that guy that makes that really weird art stuff. Okay.
Yep.
So yeah, like I'm fully expecting a very bizarre experience, and this may be way outside of my wheelhouse. I may have thought about my choice too much. But we will see. I'm curious about this. So,
as someone who has an Italian copy of one of Shintaro Kago's other works, yeah, you're in for a ride, boy. like Shintaro Kago is the best at what they do. But what they do is what they do. I'll leave it at that. But it will not leave you indifferent. Let's just use that little phrase on it. But no, I'm looking forward to this because I've wanted an excuse to buy this book, and now you've given me one. So thanks, Andy. But I couldn't justify it while I've been packing my life up. So, you know, having to actually like try and save money, quote unquote.
Mission accomplished.
So yeah, Shintaro Keigo. Also, small note: don't Google that work, all right? Like seriously.
Yes. When I said Google it, yeah, please do that in your own time without anybody who may judge you looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, you might end up in trouble. We don't want to be
or jail
or both. If you work at jail, well, short distance to go. So anyway, thank you everyone for listening. So as mentioned, this will be out, and by the time this episode comes out, I'm going to be flying across country, so hopefully there won't be any interruption to the podcast. I intend there not to be, but if not, keep an eye out on our Twitter feed at Screentone Club, just in case. You can also see the site at screentone.club, where we have our previous episodes, as well as a list of all the titles we've previously delved into. Had some ideas for some improvements to make to that, so let's see if I get some time to do some markdown editing. You can also email us at show@screentone.club. Someone actually used that email address. I haven't read the email yet, but it sat there unread in the message box. I got too scared.
Was it from a Nigerian prince?
No, unless one of our Twitter followers is a Nigerian prince. But if they are, well, thanks, I guess.
Yeah, please refer to our Patreon.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Elliot Page. You can find me at Elliot Page on Twitter, where I probably won't be posting as many cat photos because I'm about to move like 300 miles away from them. Boo-hoo. And Andy Hanley.
You can find my kettle and other tea drinking travails at Hannah's 1979.
We've got to do a tea drinking manga at some point now. I wonder if there is one.
That must be a thing.
It has to. I mean, there's one on camping, for God's sake. anyway, so yeah, thank you very much, and good night.
Bye, everyone.